Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichton. Here with me is Leo. Leo, how you doing?
The Timberwolves season, it kicks off in exactly 1 week. And that means my mental health is nervous as heck because we don't know what's going to happen. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm a mix of everything.
Yeah. Well, hey, there's 82 of them in the regular season. Got to try to put it in perspective, not try to get too overhyped for one game, but I'm sure we'll all be on our most nerves for that Lakers opener. But yeah, we'll just jump right into it. Howl or foul? We're going to head back to a topic we kind of talked about last week. Topic one, Nikhil Alexander-Walker at point guard. Leo, do you have any change of opinion based on the last couple games, or howl or foul on that one?
A week ago, I said, if my dog wasn't here right now, I would let out the biggest howl right now, but I didn't want to scare her. This time, my dog doesn't have to worry about that because I'm going with a foul. What I saw in the last two preseason games, in the Sixers game and in the Knicks game, it wasn't looking good. It looked like the Nikhil Alexander-Walker that we saw a bit later in the season, especially in the postseason where he was getting ripped at half court. He didn't look confident distributing the ball, just a lot of careless turnovers. And it is something that I'm a bit worried about. I'm hopeful for it, but right now it's kind of pendulum swinging the other way. Dream doesn't look good, but how about you? How do you feel about Nas as a backup point guard?
Yeah, I'm kind of turned to 180 on it. It's not, we should not overreact to any single preseason game or really any stretch of preseason games. But I think just seeing the up and down nature of him play at that position and seeing kind of his confidence kind of sit low on some of these games, I think anything you get from Nikhil at point guard, I think, would be a bonus. It's not that he can't play there. It's not that if you put him at point guard in a situation where, say, Mike is sitting out, that he can't hold his own. It's just that I think watching him out there a bit, the Wolves have better options at point guard than Nikhil, and it's probably best for him to try to excel in a more of a wing role, guard stopper role, than point guard. So let's theoretical scenario. Let's say Mike is out. It's the second night of a back-to-back. Mike sits out. Obviously, in that scenario, Rob Dillingham is going to get a bulk of the point guard minutes, but I still feel like they have so much depth on this roster, they're not going to want to start Rob. Maybe if Rob's playing well, he finishes. But so my question would be, who starts at point guard in that scenario? And last week I said Nikhil would get that spot, and I think I'm willing to say that I'm wrong there. Again, not trying to overreact too much to preseason games, but I think Dante would be the first pick there, and technically Ant would be the point guard, but I just think in that scenario, you'd want to get Dante as many minutes as possible, and having him in the starting lineup would be the way to do that.
Yeah, I think it's really just about maximizing the best players that you can out there at that point. It's not necessarily always about position, who's going to bring the ball up every time. There's theorized about Julius Randle's ability to bring the ball up. That's ideally not the number one or number two or even number three scenario, but Ant has certainly earned the respect to be able to bring the ball up. Dante has looked great. We'll get to more on Dante later on, but he looked great out there being able to, he cooked Paul George on one play where he did a crazy spin move, went up, and then dropped it off for Nasri. Like that looks like someone that could create offense out there other than getting his own shot. So with Rob, the goal is for him to get there. And I think if the Wolves didn't have the expectations to be able to compete for a championship this year, it would be wise for them to let him get trial by fire, putting him out there, getting more experience. He looked great in the first game against the Lakers. We had, 20 points. The next game against the Sixers, we saw the opposite. We kind of saw summer league Rob Dillingham. We saw him go out there. He had just 7 points on 8 field goal attempts. He had 9 assists, 0 turnovers. We're like, okay, I could see that as a backup point guard. But in game three against a much tougher Knicks team who was playing a lot of their starters for most of the game, he really struggled out there. He had just 2 points on 9 field goal attempts. He got yanked at one point. He did made a poor decision pulling up for three. But more concerning is that he had only one assist, and the box score shows one turnover. But if you watch that game, there were a number of plays where he just jumped in the air, had no idea where to go, mm-hmm. and just fired it off to someone. And luckily it deflected off. A defender went out of bounds or somehow got through. So I was surprised that he only had one turnover. So I was a little bit, I don't want to say worried about it, because this is a 19-year-old that's out there trying it against a really tough Knicks team. But I do hope that he will be able to assume some of that backup ability, because I am losing faith in Nikhil as a pure backup point guard.
Yeah, I think point guard minutes are kind of going to be a bit of an adventure all year. Like you said, Dillingham will get plenty of run there. In the playoffs, maybe by that time, they've kind of decided he's not necessarily a playoff player yet, which is completely fine for a 19-year-old. But they're going to need to find rotation minutes during the regular season. And I think just similar to playing Nikhil at the point in the preseason, get experience doing that during the regular season, where they're not exactly chasing every single win, every single night for every single minute of the court. I think Rob will get a ton of those minutes. But overall, I think Ant can run the point a little bit. Maybe Ingles in a similar Kyle Anderson role. I think they can get by with not having a pure point guard on the floor while kind of spreading out the point guard duties across some of their other guards.
I'm with you.
Yep. So next topic. The Wolves, are they the deepest team in the NBA? That's something that's been on my mind throughout this preseason. So they got 7 quality starting players that on any playoff team would start. The normal starting 5, along with Dante DiVincenzo and Nas Reed. All 5 of those guys, they're in your playoff starting lineup. You're not going to feel like you're undermanned there. Those are 7 great players. And then backing them up, you have Nikhil. Again, if he's coming off your bench in the postseason, you're doing great. And then they also have Ingles, makes 9. Rob Dillingham, who we just talked about, is 10. And Josh Minot, who we'll talk about later, has also been fantastic in the preseason. That makes 11. So, Leo, howl or foul on the Wolves having the deepest team in the NBA? I'm going to go howl on that based on those players I just listed. What do you think, howl or foul?
That is a bit of a foul for me. I don't disagree with you. I love the depth that our team has, and I love the top 7 we have. And again, even going to 9-11, I think that's great. I think we'll see that in our last 2 preseason games where teams are really starting to rest their starters and letting their backup play. I think, I would be surprised to see a 20-point, 30-point victory because of how deep our team is. But that said, I'm going with foul because it's not so much about the Wolves not having a great top 7. I do think that the Thunder and the Celtics have a better top 7. Not by a huge margin, but definitely by a little bit. I wrote down the top 7-ish, top 7 to 9 players on each team. And, you named all the ones for Minnesota, but with OKC, you're looking at a depth chart of Shea, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, Alex Caruso, Lou Dort, and, potentially for 7th, like Isaiah Joe or Cason Wallace. Like, those are solid contributing players. And same with Boston. With Boston, we have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps Porzingis, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Al Horford, even though he's nearing age 38. You have Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser. Like, these are quality guys that have proven mm-hmm. that they have opportunities to play heavy minutes. And so I do like to see that from them.
Yeah, I think Boston and Oklahoma City are probably two of the only names that can kind of compete for this. I guess in a very specific manner, I think one thing the Wolves have that no other team has is 7 players that could start. I'm not sure Boston quite has that. Maybe 6, definitely 6, but they don't quite have that 7th player that would be, if they were in your starting lineup all season, you'd feel good about. And Oklahoma City, I would kind of put them at probably 6 with Hartenstein now. So it's a bit of a random cutoff being 7, but I think the Wolves are going to have, in the playoffs, are going to heavily lean into that 7, and Nikhil will make 8, and that's a fantastic playoff rotation right there.
Yeah, I would love to be proven wrong on that. I would love to be able to look back and be like, you know what, you were right. That was a great top 7 that we have, and I think we do. So, time will tell, but I do think it's going to be close because there's the top-heavy teams, the ones that are really getting stronger, have proven that they've added more to their team as well, too. None of those teams got worse. And so, similar to the Wolves, we didn't get worse, per se. I mean, depends on how you feel about Julius Randle, but we also got good. So, it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think the team you'd point there is Denver, who has gotten, I'm not sure they've gotten worse, but they've definitely gotten thinner. Where Christian Brown would he be in the Wolves rotation? Yeah, he's a similar level player to Nikhil, maybe, probably better than Nikhil. But any of their bench players, I'm not sure, would be in the Wolves rotation. Maybe Westbrook, if they didn't want to get Dillingham minutes, would crack the Wolves rotation. But like you said, Dallas has a lot of players too, and they've improved throughout the offseason. So in the regular season, I think the Wolves are going to rely on that 10-man depth. I don't think Finch has kind of talked about not wanting to go to 11. It's really tough to give 11 players minutes. But if they want to do 9 or 10, I think that's going to be going to give a lot of different players a chance to play.
Yeah, with Denver, you're talking about guys like Julian Strother, who's going to be a sophomore. Oh, well, he can really shoot. Well, is that really who you're depending on if you're trying to win a championship right now? I like to see them put Julian Strother out there while Luka Garza is out there just backing him down every time, right? It's like those are guys that obviously is a little bit of bias, but again, they've proven that they're definitely way above end of the rotation, like a G League level player, like they're above that. And with guys like Julian Strother or even on Dallas Mavericks, you think about some of their fringe rotation guys, like, I don't know. I'm not so confident about that.
Yeah. And the guys like that, the Wolves could, that are our fringe rotation players, would be like Terrence Shannon or again, Josh Minot. These guys could crack an NBA rotation, but they're 11th, 12th on the Wolves depth chart. They're Luka Garza fits into that mold too. So that's 11, 12, and 13 guys right there that all those level guys are, if two guys are out and they're playing 10 minutes, you're not going, I think Luka's certainly graduated out of, oh gosh, we got to play Luka tonight. We're
right,
in trouble.
Right.
I mean, if he's like starting in one of those, if you remember those COVID games back in the day where the Greg Monroe specials.
Hey, it's a legend, Wolves legend.
Yeah. Obviously that's a role you want to avoid for Luka, but him playing 10, 12 minutes, especially against second units, as your 13th man, that's fantastic depth.
Yeah. The days of Jalen Noel being a heavy minutes guy are over. We're way past that. Jalen Noel, where would we be in our depth chart right now? You know, you're looking at Pat in the double digits probably, right?
Yeah, he wouldn't crack the rotation against this group. He'd be below Rob and Minot, so that's at least 11. So.
Absolutely.
All right, topic number 3, the NBA yearly GM survey came out. There's a lot of, you can Google it to see all the results. The two main ones we'll be concerning ourselves with were Anthony Edwards was named the top shooting guard in the NBA, according to the GMs. And then the one that was a little surprising for Wolves fans was the question, players to start an NBA franchise with. Karl Anthony Towns was named this once upon a time for the Wolves. But Anthony Edwards did not receive any votes. The top vote getters were Victor Wembanyama with 70%, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with 10, and then Jokic and Doncic also received votes down ballot. So Leo, howl or foul, Anthony Edwards being named top shooting guard as well as not receiving any votes for a player you'd want to start a franchise with.
I'm calling foul on this one. This is a stinky foul for me. Can't overthink this. There's so many reasons why Anthony Edwards should be a player that any organization will want to start at the center of, as a centerpiece of their team. I mean, he's someone that he loves the city. And for as much as we used to talk about, there's a tundra tax play in Minnesota that you really got to pay a player extra to come to Minnesota to deal with the winters, especially during the NBA season that does go through all of winter, those long winters in Minnesota. He loves it. I remember during an interview he had talked about, you know, LA's great. I love LA, but I like Minnesota more, right? I mean, that's, you know, reminiscent of kind of that Prince quote that we all know and love. He loves the city, so he's willing to take it in. He's not a guy that's going to get distracted. He has a close-knit circle of people that he trusts. He's not getting into a bunch of trouble out there. He's super marketable. I mean, we just saw him in the NBA opening day commercial. It was him and, I don't know why, Kawhi, but him and Kawhi were tipping off and featuring the faces of the NBA. He's there. He's a great actor, as we saw in Hustle. He's one of the hardest workers out there. I mean, dude looks huge. He just played way into April, May, almost June basketball in the playoffs, went straight to the Olympics, had a rotation role with the Olympics. He wasn't just Jason Tatum chilling. He wasn't just Tyrese Halliburton chilling, both who also made deep runs in the playoffs. He played legitimate minutes. And as soon as he came back, he hit the gym. He's been in the gym. He's been working. He hasn't taken a big vacation. So, you know, he's working hard. He's a great teammate. We all know that. He's always pumping up everyone. Much is made about how every time during those post-game interviews, he's always talking about, he doesn't want to talk about himself. He wants to talk about how great his teammates are. And lastly, people want to play with them. He's a guy that people just are attracted to. And if you're trying to build a team, you want to start an organization, why wouldn't you want to pick a guy that other players want to play with?
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to go Howell on him being named top shooting guard for all the reasons you said. He's just clearly the best player at that position. It's a little bit of like a soft position in the sense of kind of a lot of the top players get either funneled up to point guard or down to small forward. So the next vote getter with Devin Booker, and I think the Wolves sweeping out the Suns kind of put Ant above Booker at this point. I'm actually going to go Howell on him not being named as the franchise player to start a franchise with in this sense. To me, there's like three different types of players like to answer for this. One is whoever is just the best player in the league at that point. You could just, that makes sense to me. So Doncic and Jokic fall into this. If you were to say Giannis or someone at that level over Ant, I wouldn't have much to say because they're just right this second better than he is. The next is the guy, the rookie, second, third-year player that is clearly going to be a Hall of Famer, and so you're going to pick them thinking, I'm going to get 15 years of play out of this. And that's who most GMs pick, and Victor Wembanyama. If you pick Wemby, I got nothing to argue with Ant. Just from a longevity standpoint, you're going to get 15 Hall of Fame years. So the third category would be currently top 10-ish in the NBA, but still kind of on the come up of their career. And so I'm a little bit surprised. To me, that's not someone I would pick to start a franchise with. Maybe you would. You kind of get the best of both worlds, but I would probably either go full-on best player or youngest player. But I am surprised that SGA would be the pick over Ant in that kind of tier. To me, if you're looking for that type of player, Anthony Edwards kind of fits that bill better. He's taken a team. He's had much more playoff success than SGA, both, I think, from an individual level, but certainly from team level. And I just think he kind of fits the playoff game a little bit better, where SGA has a little bit of that free throw gimmick into him where he's kind of hunting for fouls a little bit more than Ant, not a crazy amount. But what do you think? Ant kind of, if you were to start a franchise, would you be looking at SGA or Ant in that tier of player?
As someone that plays fantasy basketball pretty heavily, that has invested a lot of picks into Shea, I could totally understand why you want to start your franchise with him. He's on my keeper dynasty league. I get it. But 10% going with Shea and none, zero for Ant is surprising because I wonder, maybe do these 10% of GMs or voters, are they big like fashionistas? Like they love the fashion. Because I get it. Like Shea's always rocking a cool fit coming out of the tunnels. He's an all-league fit team. While Ant's showing up to premieres of Netflix specials and sweats and a sweater. So maybe that's it. It reminds me, I know that Dane Moore had tweeted something recently about how he asked a GM or a front office official about the GM survey. I think it was a couple years back and wanted to ask some questions. And they kind of told him, you know what? Like most GMs aren't even the people that are answering them. It's they delegate to someone else. So again, I don't know who's voting on that. So I take it with a little bit of a grain of salt in terms of, okay, well, what does that even really mean? But yeah, 0% is pretty outlandish. And Shea being above him, again, I get that the Thunder are great and he's very clean cut. He has a really clean image. He doesn't seem to have any blips on the radar in terms of fumbles or any like kind of un-PC things that he's done or said before. So I get that. But at the same time, yeah, I just don't see it just from a purely starting your franchise from ground zero. You would take him over Ant.
Yeah, for sure. I guess we'll see it this year because Oklahoma City is going to be the favorite to be the one seed in the West and possibly the favorite to come out of the West. So I think it's kind of going to play itself out. The Wolves and the Thunder, I think, would be my top two picks to make the finals. Probably throw Denver in there too. And that doesn't even count for the team that actually won the West last year, Dallas. So, yeah, I think this debate will play itself out. We'll get to see it here as both of them kind of grow into their peak primes here. But topic number four here, Jaden McDaniels and his fouls issues. He's had 8 personal fouls over 42 minutes of play this preseason. Howl or foul, will this be an issue for the regular season like it was last year? And I'm going to go foul, not because it shouldn't be something we should worry about. He probably will get into foul trouble a lot. But from my view, they have so much depth to kind of pad around his minutes that he's missing that I think they can, in a regular season kind of point of view, that they can limit the damage of him getting in foul trouble. And I do think they can limit that foul trouble a little bit by having him play off ball a little bit more. Their defense will be a little bit less. They'll be willing to switch Julius Randle onto defenders of James defenders a little bit more than they were with Cat, I think. And I also think just with another wing defender in Dante, still have Nikhil, they're going to be willing to play those guys on ball, which will take Jaden off ball a little bit and hopefully limit his fouls. We saw that in the playoffs a little bit. Jaden was very good in a roamer type defensive role. So I'm going to go foul that it's a huge red flag issue for me. Leo, howl or foul on Jaden's fouls?
I'm going howl in a sense that I do think it will be an issue moving forward. Now, looking back the past 3 years, 2022 season, the 21-22 season, he finished ninth in total fouls. Mm-hmm. And 2023, the first year with Gobert, he was second in the league in fouls. And then last year, he really improved that. He bumped all the way down to 14th in fouls. And so when you look at it, you think like, oh, well, there's a great improvement there. Like Jaden has really figured out how to defend without fouling. And you would think, okay, well, maybe that's been addressed. But that year, 2022-23, the first year with Gobert, when he was second in fouls, Cat was out 53 games out of that year. And so that means Jaden's role did have to shift. Now, obviously, Nas started a lot of those minutes. So it's not like Jaden had to move up or play out of position, but he did have to take a little bit different of a role without Cat and and Gobert as a starting five out there. So that is why I do have a little bit of a worry is that, is he going to regress to maybe those fouling issues that he had 2 years ago, when 2 seasons ago, when Cat was out for so long? It's not so black and white as that, but I do also worry. You talk about having so many great additional defenders, or at least having another great additional defender, perimeter defender in Dante, which is true, but I do worry, does giving him more freedom to be able to play with people behind him going to hurt or help him? Jaden's primary issue is that sometimes he, for lack of better words, gets into his own feelings a little bit sometimes. He feels like he's got to prove it. A guy's playing physical, Jaden's like, all right, I'm going to play physical back, or he gets frustrated, doesn't get a call. He makes a silly foul in the other way. And so I worry that Jaden will be like, you know what? It's fine. If I pick up an early second or even early third foul, there's someone that can come in behind me, instead of really kind of reeling it in and learning, okay, the best way to defend is not getting into foul trouble all the time. And so I really hope that that gets hammered home, where he's just not out there running around, flying around, just hitting people. Like that last game against the Knicks, again, it's just one lone preseason game, but he picked up 3 fouls so fast. I believe they were in the first quarter, even in just a matter of minutes, and he's kind of regulated to the bench. And so I do worry that that'll rear its head, especially against physical players or physical teams and the physical style of play that happens as we get into the playoffs again. So I'm hoping it's not going to be, but I am a little bit worried.
Yeah, the biggest thing to me that you said there is those frustration fouls and those emotional fouls. I think a lot of people see the straight-faced demeanor of Jaden. They assume he's not a very like emotional player when he's the most emotional player on the team. And that's not a bad thing. That's probably a big reason why he's been such a great defender. But it does come with a little bit of frustration on the court.
Ask his hands.
Ask him and Clay were the fight that preceded the Draymond chokehold situation last year. I think if they can limit those and get him to, and sometimes it's just as simple as he goes up for layup, doesn't get a call, comes down and just kind of, instead of trying to make the best defensive play, just kind of fouls. I think if they can get rid of those type of fouls, that'll help him out a lot. But I also think that the way that his style of play is going to, it comes with the territory. And so I think the best thing you can do, obviously work on fouling less, but also having the best roster beside him to limit the damage when he's out, when he's on the bench.
Yep, I agree.
All right, next segment here, we got Apex Alpha. We share who we think the leader of the pack was for the Wolves in the week prior. Leo, who is your Apex Alpha?
Oh, it's none other than Ant. Ant is for sure my Apex Alpha. Again, going off this last week, those 2 preseason games, Ant didn't play very much more than 20-odd minutes each game. He looked like he was in straight midseason form. As I mentioned earlier, he's been in the weight room. You could tell he looks bigger. He showed off a couple of new moves. He hit two beautiful floaters that against the Knicks that if he does that throughout the regular season, that's going to be a scary thing for defenders have to deal with. He looks more determined than ever. I mean, there was that one sequence that was really making the rounds where Jalen Brunson had it in the left corner, ISO'd against Ant. The Ant gets out of his defensive stance. I think this is maybe the second time I've seen him do this already in the preseason, but he starts clapping at him, like pulling a Kevin Garnett out of there, just clapping at his defender. And then Jalen Brunson tries to dribble pass, try and shimmy shake him. And Ant just starts screaming, no. And he's like making all this noise. And yeah. This man's a maniac. This is preseason game three. It's not even time for the real show yet. And so he's really in there. And that second game, preseason game against the Sixers, he looked pretty sluggish coming out the first 1.5 quarters. Like, oh, okay, all right, Ant, let's go. And the next thing you know, within about like a 1 minute and 1 second of game action, he scored 9 points. It should have been 10 had he not missed a free throw on his and one. So 9 points mm-hmm. in 1 minute. That's pretty crazy. Then same thing happens again. Game three on Sunday against the Knicks. Relatively slow first 1.5 quarters, couple turnovers, I think a frustration goal 10 here or there. But then within a 1 minute and 45 span late in the second quarter, he scores 12 points in a minute 45. That's pretty crazy. And those are confident shots that he's taking. You could tell he's been working on that catch and shoot threes, really letting it rip. And again, that will open up a whole nother part of the game. So Ant for sure is my apex alpha. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I love that. In the media day, he mentioned that this catch and shoot tray ball was the number one thing he worked on. And that's really shown. He's been shooting the ball great so far in the preseason. I was at the game down in Iowa against Philly, and I did see that the ball was kind of sticking when it got to him early, but he just had that classic Ant surge down the rest of the half where he scores, I believe, 11 straight points for the Wolves, finishes the game with 16. So almost all of his points came in that stretch. He looks already ready to go. It was a couple years ago where he kind of came out of the gate slow, along with Rudy being hurt from Eurobasket and Cat getting sick. I don't think any of that's going to happen this year. I think they're going to hit the ground running right from the get-go. So seeing Ant do it and have that intensity in a preseason game, I think that's great, and that's going to bode well for the Timberwolves.
What about you? But who you got for your apex alpha for the week?
I got Josh Minot. Going back to media day again, Finch multiple times mentioned Josh as someone who had a great summer. And a lot of times you hear that, you'd go, okay, I'm sure it's true, but like, we'll see it when games come around. Well, preseason games have come around and Josh looks like a totally different player, even from this previous summer league. He is showing off that athleticism that he's always had, but his shot looks a lot better. It's going in, which is obviously the biggest thing. And he looks more aware of his surroundings. He's had a couple of nice passes on shots that would have been bad shots, but get turned into better buckets for the team. He's just looked great. And it's getting to the point where they're going to have to play him, and I'm not sure where. I think to start the regular season, he might be DNP as they try to – Rob obviously needs to be in there. And I think they're going to start – or not start. They're going to start with Ingles in the rotation. And like I said earlier, they're not going to play 11, so I think Josh will be the first person off that list. But I just think he's going to find his way into the rotation. I mean, you're not going to be healthy, 100% healthy the entire season, but even a healthy rotation, I think he's going to get himself into that rotation pretty quick.
Yeah, I love watching Josh Minot out there. We talked about it in one of our previous episodes as well, too, the matter of minutes and where that's going to come. But as you mentioned, he looks like a completely different character or player out there. He had a 4-point play earlier in this preseason, and against the Knicks, he had another one. I believe he was left corner, shot a three, and he got fouled, but it just barely rimmed out. And, you know, that's okay, that's great, but you could tell by his reaction when the shot rimmed out. It barely rimmed out. He was in and out. He was pissed. He, like, emoted on the ground. He was angry. He wasn't happy about it because he knows that he can knock that shot down. And so that confidence from perimeter is really translating to all parts of his game as well, too. He's rebounding the ball. He's doing all the little things. I really, truly do believe that Josh Minot, he can be another kind of hybrid of a Jaden McDaniels type of players. They're both about 6'8", 6'9"-ish, or that 6'8", to 6'10 range. Long spindly, about 6'11 and a half, I believe, wingspan for both of them. High energy on the defensive end. long arms, long strides, athletic. So I would really love to see him again. We talk about this is someone that was a second round draft pick who's really carved out a role. And it's not just lip service anymore. He's showing us out there that even though the box score might not have looked pristine in that final game against the Knicks, he did a lot of really great things. He was in the right position. He was boxing out. He was doing all those things that I think has held him back before. And again, this is a new Josh Minot, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, the biggest thing with this new CBA too is that you're going to need to find, especially second apron teams like the Wolves, you're going to need to find players on cheap deals that can provide value, or just whether that's cheap in terms of draft capital or money. Where they've spent a second round pick on Minot, it's been a few years now since that happened, but if they can get generally second round picks, if they're ever in your rotation, you've done a good job with that pick. And the Wolves have a bunch of players on their roster that fit that bill. Nikhil was a throw-in to the D'Lo from Mike Conley trade. Naz Reid was an undrafted free agent that has now been touted as a Karl Anthony Towns replacement. They have Jaden McDaniels as a late first-round pick. Sometimes you get nothing out of a first-round pick, and sometimes you get an all-defensive player. I just think it's so important to find these guys, especially as the Wolves get more and more expensive. Obviously, they've lessened that with the cat trade. Their financials don't look as dire as they used to. But you can, if Nikhil has to leave for financial reasons, contract reasons next offseason, it's not going to be the biggest thing in the world, because I think they'll just plug Josh Minot in there.
Yeah, I think you think about the top tier of the West. We talked about the Nuggets earlier. Last year, they relied a good amount on Peyton Watson throughout the regular season, and they really talked about Peyton Watson taking over the Bruce Brown kind of role when they lost him two off seasons ago. And Josh Minot really reminds me of that Peyton Watson type. Now, Peyton Watson was a bit unplayable in the playoffs because he couldn't get a shot going. I remember the Wolves daring him to shoot. I think he airballed a couple three-pointers. And so he was young. He was a rookie. But there's no reason that Josh Minot can't be as useful as a Peyton Watson type of player, where he could wreak havoc out there. Again, on defense, you'll make some plays sometimes that'll make you'll challenge everything. I think Josh Minot got dunked on once or twice in the preseason, but he's challenging. He had a couple great blocks as well, too. So love to see it.
Yeah. I'm just hoping they can find a rotation spot for him, because they're just so deep. I think it's going to they're going to start the year with Ingles. I do kind of think there's going to be times this year where Ingles might be the odd man out and Minot will get a chance, but we'll see. They'll certainly keep getting him preseason minutes as the Wolves now have a preseason back-to-back on Wednesday and Thursday. So maybe that'll be Josh Minot's time, less so than the older Ingles. All right, next segment, Play of the Week. Kind of a play on words here. It's either Play of the Week, our favorite play, or who did the Timberwolves make their prey? Leo, who was your prey of the week?
It's an easy one for me. The prey of the week is the Knicks coaching staff. Mm-hmm. You watch the New York Knicks, Minnesota Timberwolves preseason game on Sunday. Dante DiVincenzo gave it to his former team. Not only was he balling on the court, but he was getting it going. He was talking a little bit of trash to the Knicks sidelines. There's at one point he got fouled on an and-one, a little floater attempt. And as he walks to the line, you probably seen the clips floating around on socials, but he started spitting a little bit of trash at Coach Tibbs, I believe, saying, "Oh, you saying I can't finish, right? I can't finish, right?" And later he said, this is your, you know, you're the one in control. You're the one, you run the ship," basically is what he was saying. Like, y'all did this. And it was funny because after the game, he was asked about, like, "Oh, what were you saying to him? Were you saying something about thanks for the trade? Thank you for trading me, Tibbs." I think that was a misquote. That was a miscaption that was going around on socials. He said, "No, it was just all in good fun." But that doesn't just happen randomly. Like, that came from a place of him feeling a certain way about that trade. As much as you could say, "Oh yeah, you know, Tibbs is, you know, I had a great relationship with them. I thank him for him," but you wouldn't be shouting at one of your ex-coaches in that way. It did not look like he was necessarily saying, like, "Hey, I love you, but let me hear, you know, throw some trash that way." And then afterwards as well, too, Rick Brunson, a former Timberwolves coach, assistant coach, got into it with Dante as they were doing the post-game kind of handshakes on the court. And Rick Brunson said that, "Oh, that was like a sucker move" or something like that. And then Dante said, "Yo, I was talking to Tibbs," but they kind of got into it. They had to get separated. And, you know, Dante was just showing him, like, "Yo, I'm more than what y'all thought I was, and y'all are going to miss me." And that's for sure. And it's funny because when you look at social medias, people are, you know, these are making the rounds, going viral. Most Knicks fans are kind of backing up Dante on this, even though he's not on the team anymore. They're saying that, "Oh man, we're really going to miss Dante, man. That's the Dante that we love. Like, you know, it's so funny. And so, yeah, I put out a tweet out there. Again, I'm not going to go too deep into detail about my thoughts on Rick Brunson, but Rick Brunson isn't necessarily someone that a lot of us Minnesota Timberwolves fans have a fond memory of back in 2018 when he was released from his duties, let's just say that. So, you know, that's my prayer of the week. The Knicks coaching staff, they got embarrassed on an innocent preseason Sunday afternoon game.
Yeah, I think the DiVincenzo tip stuff was all in good fun. I mean, it's kind of like all jokes have a sliver of truth to them. I'm sure there's a little small amount of bad feelings is probably the wrong way to phrase it, but it was all in good fun. You were teammates, now you're against each other, so you make fun of your friend a little bit. I think that was in good fun. The Brunson stuff is just kind of weird to me. Why an assistant coach is going after an opposing player is, I don't know. I don't know why that is happening. Why in that case, kind of like you kind of said, I think maybe the most simple answer is that Brunson didn't take the joke very well, where Tibbs just either ignored it or laughed it off, or all in good fun. It's kind of unfortunate that the misquote got out there. I think that was Timberwolves clips that yeah. misquoted him, and that's a yeah. great foul, and he's apologized, so it's not to come down on Timberwolves clips, but it's kind of one of those things where the misquote kind of goes more viral than the correction situation, because I don't, as much as it's fun to like find the bad blood, I don't think there's really that much there. Maybe there is with Brunson, but I don't think Tibbs and DiVincenzo or anyone on the Wolves have any real beef that tracks with you.
Yeah, I think after the game, Dante continued talking about the whole Rick Brunson thing, and Dante was one of the best men for Jalen Brunson, who got married, I think, recently within the last year. And so he's close with the family. And so he said that he'd address it in private with Rick later on. And so, again, it's not as juicy to say like, oh, it's all good fun, they're all friends, it doesn't matter. But, you know, it's quite interesting. I think it's just going to add to that drama when the Knicks play the Timberwolves again moving forward. That's just another soundbite for them to play to put into that media package when they're advertising like, hey, tune in, Knicks Timberwolves, you got Kat versus Ant, you got Dante versus, you know, the coaching staff, you know, all that type of Julius making his return. You know, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do enjoy that they got this kind of the weird Kat game with the Knicks, the weird rematch out of the way in the preseason, because I think when the regular season rolls around, I'm glad this happened, whatever this was, in the preseason, and we can just play basketball in the regular season.
Oh, it's never going to go that way. You know, something's going to pop off. Someone, especially knowing Ant, he's going to say something. And again, and with Ant, it never seems really like personal. He definitely is kind of more on the playful side, but there's going to be sparks for sure. And screw it, right? I mean, New York is, we all know that kind of ESPN East Coast bias sometimes with New York teams. Like, screw it, Minnesota versus everyone, right? Like, we'll take it. We'll fight them on that. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, Ant got to dunk on his childhood idol in USA basketball practice, so I'm sure in the same vein, he'll want to dunk on his buddy, Karl Anthony Towns, if he can.
It's going to be weird.
Yeah. Well, going back to Dante, he's my prey of the week. He's been a really fun kind of getting to talk to him a little bit down in Des Moines post game. He gives a lot of good quotes. So I'm going to play a clip that Finch said about Dante, a question for me pregame. Or this is post-game, talking about Dante kind of fitting in with the team pretty quickly.
Dante seems to have really integrated himself well into the offense, especially just getting traded here not that long ago.
Yeah.
Is that what you guys have been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, really good. Kind of a threat from wherever he is all over the floor. We like that. Playmaking's been really, really solid. Always makes the right play, makes it easy, makes it simple, makes it early. You know, we got to continue to generate great looks for him.
Yeah, so a clip I didn't cut up was Nasri talking about Dante shooting from deep, like not just three-point, like way behind the line, and how much that he said he's never really played with someone like that shoots from that far out. So I think it's really cool to see Dante just so immediately kind of hop into the rhythm of the team, have like just no issues, just immediately providing value, albeit in preseason games.
I love everything that we're getting from Dante, that as soon as he was out there and he was bombing away from three and he was making the right plays, he was doing all the little things that we love to see. And when he was getting into it with the Knicks coaches on the sidelines, it stirred something in me that I feel like I've lost in the last couple of weeks about, I'm excited about Timberwolves basketball again. You know, after the trade, again, I was emotional. I had a connection with Kat, and it was hard. He'd been here for 9 years, et cetera, et cetera. But seeing Dante out there really brought that spark back in me. Be like, you know what? I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to love again, type of thing. And so that happens not just emotionally, but just by what he brings on the court. There's a really great preview on The Athletic that talks about when this was done by, I think it was James Edwards, the second or third. He works for The Athletic. He writes for the New York Knicks now. And so he was doing a player profile on Dante before he got traded. And obviously, since he's been traded, he still posted the piece anyway. So basically, it was about, he covers this great story about how Dante, when he was playing on Villanova, that Jay Wright needed him to mirror. They're going to play OU, I think it was, with Buddy Hield still on the team back then. And he needed Dante to mirror Buddy Hield's style of play, running around, shooting threes, and coming off ball. And that he did it so well that kind of hurt the team morale because of how great he was at doing this other role. And so, again, we're just seeing the brilliance of Dante isn't that he's not just a one-trick pony. He's not just a shooter. He's not just a defender. He's not just a hard-nosed guy that's going to try and make – like, he does a little bit of everything. And I think that's the type of player that Finch really loves. He loves that multi-use, that Swiss – that I can't even speak it correctly. He's a jack of all trades, yep, and master of many, really, in some respects. And so I think that's going to do us really well as we move forward. And I love seeing him out there. I get excited. I really hope he plays a lot more minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if he earns that Kyle Anderson seal of approval by Coach Finch, where he allows him to play in all those really heavy minutes and times out there.
Yeah, I saw that piece too. Hearing collegiate Buddy Hield as someone that Dante was able to replicate in practice, it's a really good player comp to me. Buddy Hield was a fantastic college player.
Absolutely.
One of the better scoring, kind of the precursor to Trae Young at Oklahoma, where the scoring in college was amazing. A very good NBA player too. But Dante brings a lot of that movement shooting and that also using his dribble to get to the rim and make plays. I think it's been amazing to see how well Dante has played. Obviously, when the trade happened, we both were like, this might be the biggest piece of this trade is Dante. And he's just has been amazing immediately. Maybe that comes from playing for, I think, four teams in 4 years, Milwaukee, Golden State, Sac, and now the Wolves. I think him playing for those teams maybe was able to get him integrated more quickly than if he was playing with Milwaukee and just came from there.
Yeah, it's goes back to that depth piece that you're talking about, is having someone that is a legit sixth man of the year candidate when you already have the reigning sixth man of the year on your team. That's really saying something. This isn't going to be the seventh man of the year type quality player. This is a legit starter level type player that we will likely be bringing off the bench. Who knows for how long, the way he's playing, and wouldn't be surprised if he is starting more games at the end of it. So, you know, when those polls go up of who's straw polls of who's going to be a sixth man of the year, I don't know how much Dante's going to get love for it, because he might be starting more games than he's going to qualify for the sixth man of the year. So we'll see.
Yeah, it might be a split vote situation if him and Nas are both coming off the bench and just running and gunning.
Absolutely. That actually happened on a Rudy Gobert team not so long ago when Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson kind of got that. They were both vying for sixth man of the year. They both played so beautifully and they kind of uplifted each other off the bench. And so, you know, I would love to see that type of synergy between those two players.
And different players winning sixth man of the year back-to-back years from the same team is 7 one other time with the Clippers with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. So maybe that's in the cards, or maybe one or both of them will start too many games for the Wolves. That's certainly also possible. All right, we'll move on to our next segment, Playtime, where we take our Wolves hat off and look around the league. In this case, we're going to go to the W, where the Minnesota Lynx have made the WNBA Finals. They are currently series tied 1-1. We'll kind of talk about both games, but first, game one. Holy cow, that is one of the most insane basketball games I've ever seen. A quick rundown, the Lynx went down 18 points, I believe, at most, and they were down 15 with 5 minutes left, 11 with 3 minutes left, and Courtney Williams hits an and-one three down three to tie the game, and then the free throw put them up one. A split pair of free throws, Brianna Stewart pushed it to halftime, where the Lynx took a 5-7 point lead. The Liberty came right back to tie the game before just an absolutely gorgeous turnaround jump shot from Nafisa Collier to ice the game. if that game happened on the men's side, it would be the talk of everything for a long, long time.
Instant classic. Yeah,
and it was for the WNBA. It's a great start to the finals. Unfortunately, the Lynx did lose game two. But what did you think about just a bonkers game one?
It's one of those games that you'll forever remember where you were during that. Similar to like a game seven of the Timberwolves against the Denver Nuggets in the semis. It was insane. I was watching that game. I was getting ready for my usual Thursday night pickup basketball session with my fellas. And I was watching it on my own in the corner of a room. One of my friends came over. He's like, "Oh, what are you watching? Are you watching preseason?" He's like, "No, I'm watching finals. This is WNBA finals." And him, in kind of typical fashion, was like, "Oh, women's? Okay, I'll watch it with you." So I'm watching. And as you said, they were down 11, I think, so with about only a little over 2 minutes left. And he's like, "Oh, this is over. Let's go hoop. It's over." And I was like, no. "You don't know this team. This team never gives up. It's not over." He's like, "All right, sure. I know you're rooting for your Minnesota team, but it's over." And then they hit a three, get a stop. They score another bucket. And yeah, all leads up to that crescendo of Courtney Williams hitting that huge three. And I lost it. That was crazy. And there was some, you know, you said some interesting stuff that happened at the end of the regulation. Out of bounds calls that was botched, a questionable foul. But it was such a fun game. And it really shows you what, if you haven't been watching Minnesota Lynx basketball all year, this was like the epitome of the type of team that it is. They never get too down on themselves. No matter how big they're down, no matter who's active or who's not active or who their opponent is, they just keep pushing forward. They play strong defense. They move the ball. They play a selfless brand of basketball. And all comes back to Nafisa Collier, because that's the way that she is as the leader of the team. It's never about, "Oh, well, I'm going to demand the ball. I'm going to score. Get me the ball." You know, it's always about playing team first basketball. And it really gets me excited to see that. And as you said, in game two, you know, they unfortunately fell down 17 points in the first quarter. They were down 18 in the first quarter of game one. And they were down 17 in the first quarter of game two. So let hope that they can come back. And lo and behold, with just a couple minutes left, I think it was about 4 or 5 minutes left, Lynx made their move. They were within 2 points. And unfortunately, this time, the cookie just didn't crumble the way that we hoped it would have, like it did in game one. Courtney Williams missed a pull-up mid-range jumper just by a little bit right off the back iron, a shot that she normally makes 9 out of 10 times, her kill zone. The next play down, she comes down, she dribbles off her foot, leads to Leone Fibich 3 that really put it out of, you know, into a triple possession game. And it was over. And so, you know, it's still a valiant effort. There's a lot of great things to take away from it. I talked about in the recap, the Lynx have not lost 2 games in a row all season, except twice. And the 2 times that ever happened was when Fee either got injured in the game or during the times where Fee was not playing because of that said injury. And so since then, they haven't lost 2 in a row. So I don't expect them to lose game 3 in front of you got to believe it's going to be a crazy Target Center crowd over there. They have one of the best home court advantages there. So it's going to be rocking. I'm fully believing that they're not going to allow, because the home crowd, they're not going to allow themselves to dig that huge first quarter deficit that they had in the first 2 games. And because of that, they'll have so much more energy to close the game where they don't have to play perfect basketball like they did in game one.
Yeah. The 2 biggest things for me will be not digging the hole where they're down double digits in the first half. If they can keep it close or have a lead early on, hopefully the home fans can build them to that. That'll be huge because they've been winning the third quarters like they have all year, and they've been doing well late in games. So if they can just kind of survive the first few minutes or win those, that'll be huge. And then the post entry passes in game two are a huge issue.
Yeah,
Brianna Stewart set a record with 7 steals, so they need to find a way to get entry passes around her. Obviously, she is a very long player with her arms, so it's not an easy task. But a big part of their offense is Nafisa Collier post-ups, as we saw in game one with the game winner. So they need to find a better way to do that. And if any coach is going to figure it out, it's going to be Cheryl. So
absolutely,
that'll be the big one. I'm excited. I'm going to game four. I got my tickets. They got the upper deck open, so there'll be way more fans there. Should be, tickets were affordable, so hopefully that usually helps with rowdy fans. We saw in the Wolves series that the tickets kind of get out of, they price out the louder fans. That shouldn't be happening. The season ticket holders all got their tickets, and some of the rowdier people like myself can buy the cheap seats and scream our head off for potentially what we're hoping for is a title Friday night for game 4.
Yeah, I'm super jealous. I mean, there's times like this where I'm saying, I wish I was just a little bit closer to Minnesota. I'm out here. My wife and I are talking about, okay, well, if it goes to game five, how do we manage flying out to New York on a Sunday across the country from California to New York for that? Because that would be such a crazy game. It's been such a fun series back and forth. And so, you know, no matter if you're a Lynx fan, which most of us are, or you're a Liberty fan, or just a fan of sports, you should tune in if you haven't been already. This is high level basketball. These are two great teams that play a great brand of basketball, and they stand for a lot of great things. So yeah, I agree. Looking forward to a strong game three, hopefully clinch it in four. Clinch it at home would be great. And as you said, get that ball to Nafisa Collier. Sometimes she is so selfless. Sometimes she's a little too selfless, right? It's a Michael Scott quote that my weakness is that I don't have any weaknesses, or my weakness that I care too much, right? Where Nafisa Collier, you know, there was at one point she was kind of demanding the ball. She had a mismatch. This is in crunch time where the game was still within reach, game two. But instead of maintaining precision, she just kind of exited. It was like, all right, well, I'll let Courtney Williams do her thing as she's done. And, you know, sometimes the cookie crumbles, her shot's not falling. But there are times where the whole team really has to recognize, you know, get the ball to Fee, something good's going to happen from it.
Yeah. And the biggest player that's kind of not playing well right now is Bridget Carlton. Her three-point shot is kind of lost her a bit. So that'd be another big, big swing. If they can get her making threes, that's such a big part of their offense. Just the ball moves very well, and so you get a lot of open shots for players like Bridget. So if she can knock those down, that'll be huge, because New York has been seemingly making every single open three they get. Obviously, they have good shooters, so that's part of it. But if the Lynx can match that three-point shooting, they have they really need to, because they've been turning the ball over too much. If you're going to turn the ball over too much,
right?
Struggle on the rebounds and not shoot the ball well. Honestly, I'm not sure how they were able to win one of the games in New York.
Yeah, they were the top three-point shooting team all season. Right. So I definitely believe in the numbers. The law of averages will swing back. Just keep taking that. They're getting a lot of open looks. So just keep shooting them. They'll fall. I trust.
Absolutely. I agree. All right. Our final segment here, two words. Will we give our two words to describe the state of the Wolves? My two words are Julius Randle. He will be making his preseason debut on Wednesday. I would guess it'll be his only preseason game, given that they play, because of the Lynx, they play a preseason back-to-back. They come back home for Thursday. I'm going to guess Randle, who's still kind of dealing with his shoulder, will not be playing in a back-to-back. And if he does, it'll be very light minutes. But I'm interested to see Randle play in Chicago here on Wednesday. Just what does it look like? We've seen Dante kind of hit the ground running. I would expect a little bit more of a learning curve for Randle, but I'm excited to kind of get the player that we got back for Kat, the main piece, on the court, because I think a lot of people are sleeping on what he can do for the Wolves.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him too. I've been waiting. I think we've all been waiting to see Julius Randle play. And my hope is that against the Bulls, the poor tanking Bulls, that our entire starting five suits up. I mean, Mike Conley rested the last game, so did Rudy Gobert. So you would hope that hopefully for game, you know, on Wednesday's game against the Bulls, that they all play. So we can really see, again, even if it's just for one quarter, how that team looks, and give them time to figure it out. Because as much as they can practice all they want, play, you know, like they're not going to actually be able to figure it out to playing against real competition out there. So I think it is important, hopefully, that all five of them will be able to play. And then again, we'll have the bench go wild, the second, third, and even those Exhibit 10 guys go wild for the final game against the Nuggets on Thursday. So I'm pumped for Julius Randle. I would love to see him play well. But most importantly, I just want to see him get out healthy as well too.
For sure.
Yeah. My two words is we're fine. I'm kind of cheating there. I'm putting two words together, but it's we're fine. Because I know, speaking for myself, there's a little bit of early trepidation for me after that Wolves trade. Like, did y'all really, again, had friends asking me, people that here in California that know I'm the only Timberwolves fan in the world here in their vicinity, is that, aren't you a little worried that, didn't y'all just make the conference finals and you guys traded away the highest paid player on your team, one of your star players on your team? Like, aren't you a little bit worried about that? And I was, to be honest. I was like, well, why would we make that trade? Like, yeah, I'm worried about it. Yes, I know we got good players back, but I am worried about it. But then now that we've seen them in action and seen not even just Dante playing well and seeing Rob have some good games in there, seeing Josh Minot do his thing, it's the fact that they're playing a different style of basketball now that's so exciting for me. and that they're running more, they're getting more three-point shots up, they're playing a different brand of basketball, where yes, that may lead to a little bit of adjustment in terms of, okay, there will have to be some chemistry that's going to have to be built, getting used to playing that style. I'm sure it's going to affect their defensive numbers compared to last year. But if anything, I would even just go with one word, which would be is relax. Mm-hmm. I think for all of us as Wolves fans, we need to relax and trust that Tim Connelly, as we mentioned before, we got to trust him at the helm. Chris Finch, he was a finalist for Coach of the Year. We got to trust him as well, too. And most importantly, we got to trust Anthony Edwards, you know, as a leader of the team to bring everyone together. So I think my two words is we're fine.
Yeah, I agree. I'm interested to see what kind of offense they can come out there with, because that's the huge point of this regular season to me, is if the defense falls kind of out of that top position, I think that's all right. But can we get that offense certainly top 10? And if we can have a top 10 offense with one of the two or three best defenses, that's a formula for playoff success for many rounds, or hopefully all the rounds.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what it looks like with everyone healthy on Wednesday, and also in the season opener against the Lakers, which is coming up here extremely fast.
Yeah. They fired off, again, one last thing about the offense. Last season, they averaged 32.7 three-point attempts per game.
It's going to go way up.
Yeah, in the game against the Knicks, they shot 48 threes. Now, again, this is a preseason game. It's not going to be shot for shot how it's going to be once the dress rehearsals are over. But yeah, I do expect that number to go up. If we do, like you mentioned, sacrifice maybe two spots, is maybe we're top three, or at least maybe a top five, even the fifth best defense. But our offense jumps into that, maybe that top 10 category. That would be a game changer for us. So I can't wait for opening night. I can't wait for preseason tomorrow. I'm just excited. Sorry, preseason Wednesday.
Well, we'll be watching those. Our schedule here, we'll be back next week to kind of fully preview the start of the season and probably touch on the two preseason games that happened the week prior, as well as the WNBA finals that will have ended by the time of our next episode. So there'll be at least two more games in that series, possibly three, if the team split the two here in Minneapolis. Like I said, I'll be at game four. So we're hoping for a Lynx title, and then we'll touch on the start of the season next week.
Yep. We're excited to see y'all next week. Tune in again. Make sure y'all drive safe.
Have a good one, guys.